If you love America, you're among friends here. ConservativeNationRadio.org.
There's no time to kill between the cradle and the grave. Father, time still takes a toll on every minute that you save. Legal tender's never gonna change. Number on your days, the highest cost of living's dying. That's one everybody pays. So have it spent before you get the bill. There's no time to kill.
Welcome to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. Inside Tennessee is sponsored by the Tennessee Action Council, an educational organization dedicated to restoring constitutionally limited government and the Judeo-Christian values that made our country great. Visit our website at tn4action.com. That's tn4action.com. The phone number to call and join the conversation is 718-305-7176. That's 718-305-7176. Thank you for joining us tonight. We have some great guests lined up. Senator Mae Beaver's with us. She's going to talk to us about her bill that would help stop Obamacare in Tennessee, Senate Bill 1680. And then a little later on, we're going to hear from Bill Hemrick. He's going to talk to us about the Obama czars and the power they have and potential for problems and the fact that they're unaccountable. And then a little later on in the night, we're going to have Representative Tim Hill from East Tennessee. He's got a bill that will be in the Education Subcommittee in the morning in reference to education in Tennessee. Basically, the bill just would require our state to teach our U.S. and state history, talk about the founders, teach about the founding documents, just some basic stuff. And apparently there's some people that don't want to go along with that, including our governor. Anyway, thank you for joining us tonight. Without any further ado, we're going to get with Senator Beavers here and talk to her a little bit. Senator Beavers, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. How are you tonight?
Doing fine. I appreciate you being with us.
Well, it's my honor. Thank you for asking me on. It's always good to be able to get the word out on your bills.
Well, and you know, I appreciate you because you're one of the few up there. There's only a handful that can be relied on to bring conservative legislation to the floor, and we really appreciate what you do. Senate Bill 1680, which would essentially stop Obamacare in Tennessee, and so that I don't get something wrong here because I haven't looked at it as much as I would like to have, just let you tell us a little bit about the bill.
Sure. The bill, of course, we because the Supreme Court has said Obamacare is constitutional, you know, we can't stop it, but we can stop it by implementing the law that we have in this bill that withdraws all material support for Obamacare from the state. The bill is modeled really after the one that had been filed in Georgia. We've worked with the 10th Amendment Center to write this bill. Evidently, it's a little bit stronger than some legislators would like to see. Some of them pulled their names off of it, but we hope to add an amendment on the, actually the contracting part and hope to get them back on the bill.
Now, let me ask you something. Several dropped off. What was the reason that they gave for dropping out?
Well, I've really only heard from two, and their reasoning was that there's a provision in there that it would void all state contracts, and they were concerned about that. And, you know, that's no big deal. We'll amend that. We'll get it done. But we're basing our bill on the fact that there are Supreme Court cases. There are four that I can name. I understand there's many more. That says that the federal government cannot force states to implement or enforce any federal act or program. It's called the Anti-Commandeering Doctrine, and it's based mostly on Prigg versus Pennsylvania, an 1842 case, New York versus U.S., 1992, and Prince versus U.S., 1997, and then NFIB versus Sebelius. The Prince case is the cornerstone of that doctrine, And that's what we're proceeding on, is that we want to forbid any state employee from participating in materially supporting the Obamacare.
Now, if you mentioned the contract issue with that was the objection of some of the senators.
Right.
They had the bill, and you said that can be fixed. Now, can that be fixed without diluting and watering down the bill?
I think so. You know, I've been reading what other states are doing, and I saw where Judge Napolitano had commented, I believe it was on Georgia's bill the other day, and I don't think there's had that provision. It was pretty simple. It was just the anti-commandeering doctrine, so to speak, plus outlawed the exchanges in that state, and he said that alone would kill Obamacare. We've got five states right now that have filed bills, and actually Indiana's governor has gotten behind the bill up there.
Wow. No chance our governor will get behind the bill, I don't guess.
I don't think so. I haven't heard from them. I don't know.
I was just being facetious.
Right. You know, I'm not sure what they're going to have to say about it. I can only imagine. But, you know, I don't think that anybody can debate that our bill is constitutional. I think it's based on sound, you know, on Supreme Court cases. You know, if anybody wanted to sue, they could win. But this is certainly hit some people, because I've been getting emails from all over the country. And yesterday I was told by one lady that one of the people that had been commenting on some of my posts was actually the Obamacare website. And I think she was right, because I wrote something on my Facebook about all of that, and they haven't been back on there writing anything. I've had threats, nasty emails, even got chewed out at a Chamber of Commerce meeting in Cannon County the other night.
What?
Yes.
Who was upset with you?
A gentleman from the county there who said I was just grandstanding, and, you know, obviously he believes that the federal government should be furnishing him health care. But yeah, it's been interesting. And then, of course, the Knoxville paper did a whole editorial about how I was wasting the time of the legislature.
Wasting the time of the legislature by trying to stop a policy that most everybody agrees is not only, let's just say on the safe side, un-American, but it's going to destroy our economy. So, you know, how are you wasting the legislature's time by trying to stop something that most people don't want? That's crazy. But then again, you know, your major papers are generally not in sync with the average person, and certainly not with the average informed person.
Right. And, of course, the Tennessean wrote in yesterday's paper that, you know, I guess I kind of stole the spotlight from the governor and lieutenant governor by introducing these this week, and that they probably had no chance of passing. And the other one I'm talking about is the Tennessee Firearms Freedom Act that we have rewritten. You know, all of these could be based on the same anti-commandeering principle that we're talking about, you know, and we have cases to back them up. You know, the federal government can pass gun laws all day long, but they can't come and require people, our law enforcement, our state employees to enforce their laws.
Right, right. Now, you said earlier that you hadn't heard anything from the governor's office on the health care bill?
No, I haven't, but we filed it Wednesday, and, of course, we weren't there very long Thursday, but, you know, I'm not sure if anybody else heard from him or whether it's Blue Cross Blue Shield or what's going on, you know, and why people are pulling off the bill.
Okay. Now, Blue Cross Blue Shield is the main contractor that they're concerned about. or they would be concerned about losing, correct?
Right.
Okay.
But, you know, we're going to proceed. We're going to we're going to proceed, you know, with probably an amendment. I have agreed to work with Senator Green on, you know, rewriting that contract portion. And, you know, we'll see where it goes.
Well, now, so the amendment would, any idea on the language of the amendment?
No, not yet. He's supposed to be working on that.
Okay. Okay. Well, I'm looking forward to, and, you know, I hope that, and actually I talked to him a little earlier today. He indicated that, you know, that was his only concern, that he would be back on board. Hopefully the others will get back on board after that's addressed. And you say it'll still have teeth, so that's what counts.
Yes, because we, you know, back in 2011, we passed the Health Freedom Act. It was the first bill that the governor signed. That bill, of course, said that if the federal government tried to fine Tennesseans for not having health care, that our attorney general, you know, could represent them. Do we look for our attorney general to do that? No. I think, you know, it would take special counsel or, you know, it would take more action, I'm sure, on the part of the legislature if that were to happen.
So the governor did sign the health care freedom bill in 2011.
Yes, that was the very first bill that he signed. I don't know if he's had any second thoughts or not.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised he actually signed that one, or I was surprised to hear that he signed it. But now that dealt just with protecting Tennesseans from being fined. It didn't really, wasn't designed to stop Obamacare, per se.
No. And we felt like that's what we could do at the moment to try to protect Tennesseans. And I've been working on this ever since they were thinking about passing Obamacare, and then sure enough, they passed it. And, you know, we've been introducing legislation ever since. But I think the ultimate goal of Obamacare is to have a monopoly on health coverage. People are having so many problems signing up on the website. I read today where a woman had been working for 6 months. She had signed up, and she took her 6 months to get off of it. All kinds of stories. I've heard other stories, of course, in all of this, that people are able to get insurance now. It's cheaper. But then I've read that most of the people that are getting on it were not people that were uninsured, but people where they had companies who had to drop their health care coverage because of Obamacare. I was in a store in Lebanon a few days ago, and the owner told me that he had had a letter from the federal government saying, you know, your health care contract qualifies, you know, you can keep it. He just got a letter from his insurance company canceling his insurance policy, telling him that it was not sufficient. And people are confused. They don't know where to go. It's a mess right now.
Yeah, I mean, you got horror stories everywhere. Anyway, I got to do a quick read here, but our friendly local pilot in command and GOP spokesman Duke Brooks calls himself a paleocon, and rightly so, since it's clear that anti-communism is in his DNA. His parents were friends with Joe McCarthy, Bill Buckley, and Whitaker Chambers, so what would you expect? There's no truth to the rumor that he has a dartboard with Alger Hiss's picture on it, but you can get your weekly dosage of old-school conservatism, right-wing politics, American history, and hangar flying on Radio Free America with Duke Brooks, Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central, on conservativenationmedia.com, where America always wins. You're listening to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The number is 718-305-7176, and we're speaking with Tennessee State Senator Mae Beavers in reference to her proposal to stop Obamacare in Tennessee, essentially. And when do you expect the amendments to be added to the bill, Senator Beavers?
We'll work on these this week. You know, it just depends on mine and Senator Green's schedule to get together on that. And we will have this bill on second reading on Wednesday. I hope we can get the second reading in time to put it on notice for committee for next week.
Yeah. Well, you know, with Senator Green being a doctor and, you know, having his own business, and so he knows something about, you know, what you've already mentioned in terms of the problems Obamacare is causing, is causing everybody. You know, if he sponsors an amendment, and, you know, I would think it would be hard for people, you know, to find an excuse not to support this bill. If we've got an amendment that takes care of the biggest concern that that he and others mentioned, I'm hoping that you would get near unanimous support in the Senate. I don't know how plausible that is, but seems to me like it'd be harder to vote against.
That's my thinking, is that, you know, if we pretty much confine it to just state employees not being commandeered by the federal government to enforce their law, I think it'll go, because, you know, that's kind of the gist of the bill. It went into a little more detail, and when some of them read about the contracting part, they got a little excited about it. But hopefully we can get this done. I don't know how much influence Blue Cross Blue Shield is going to have, and whether or not, if we, you know, take the contracting out, whether that will affect them or not. I think anything we do is probably going to affect them. You know, if we cut off support for the bill, and if five states cut off support for Obamacare and will not help the federal government implement it, that should gut it and cause the failure. Of course, everybody thinks it's going to fail on its own, but we're hoping to ensure that it fails so that we can get it back to the state level, that we can make our own laws regarding insurance, and, you know, people can have, I'd like to see them have more competition, you know, in getting their health care. And I'm just afraid this is going to permanently damage that.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't want to rely on it just falling under its own weight. You know, federal programs don't normally, they don't just go away, and you got to drive a stake through its heart. And if it takes five states or 10 states doing what you're trying to do, then that's what we need to happen some way, somehow. Now,
actually what we needed was for Congress to defund it a long time ago.
Well, yeah, and that seemed like a no-brainer, too. And, you know, in 2010, we sent so many people there that's what they led us to believe that they would do, that they would go there and fight. And, you know, they were there to cut the government. They were there to cut spending. I haven't
seen.
The only thing that's been cut at all is the military. That's the only thing that they seem inclined to really cut.
I went to see Lone Survivor the other night, and that will really make an impression on you if you go see that, about, you know, the circumstances that our men are fighting under and, you know, our rules of engagement. It'll really make you think.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I plan to go see that, and I've got some military connections, so I understand at least somewhat on the rules of engagement, and they are ridiculous. They're absolutely insane. Anyway, we've got to take a quick break. Appreciate you being with us. Don't go away, and we'll be right back.
Aren't you glad the so-called fairness doctrine doesn't apply here?
Welcome back to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176, and we're talking with Senator Beavers in reference to the Stop Obamacare bill in Tennessee. Representative Pody is the House sponsor of the bill, and can you give us any insight? I wasn't able to get him on the show tonight. He had a previous engagement, but can you give me any insight on how it's looking on the House side?
I really don't know at this point. I do know that Representative Weaver, Representative Butt, you know, some others have signed on. I don't know all of the names. Mark told me he has 15 sponsors, and then we got a message from Joe Carr that he would like to sign on. So I think he'll get quite a few sponsors over there.
Great, great. I hope so. Well, we got a caller on the line here. Let's see if Kurt's got a question for you. Kurt, how are we doing tonight?
Doing good, Dave. Good evening, Senator Beavers.
Good evening. Thank you.
And for what it's worth, Department, if you're in, when I happen to get through the area tomorrow, I'll be stopping in to see you. We're coming to Nashville to hearing on the Common Core issues, and I hope to be able to talk with you.
Sure.
Of course, as you know, I'm totally on board with the effort here on this Obamacare thing. I don't have the vocabulary to express my disgust for that whole scenario, so I'm not even going to try. But I know Dave knows, and you know where I stand on this. We'll be giving any kind of support that we can. A little bit of – this is on a different page, but it's good news. You'll like this. I just put the icing on a deal today with your good friend John Harris to appear at an event here in Henry County in March. John will be our keynote speaker for a fundraiser.
Great.
Yeah.
Ron,
so.
John Harris knows everything there is to know about our firearms laws in Tennessee because he's written most of them. John was up there lobbying on the permit, the carry permit law in 1995 when I first joined the legislature, and has written just about every law that has come out of the legislature on firearms, all the good ones, that is.
Yeah. Yeah, this should be a good event. And anyway, but I'll let you and Dave get back to your topic there on the Obamacare thing. And we hope that this works out. I'm glad to know that Representative Carr has said that he's going to be on board with this too.
Yes, and he also told me that he would sign on to my Tennessee Firearms Freedom Act. We have rewritten that bill, and we'll be coming back with that this year. And, you know, in pretty much the same way that it will create an offense to knowingly enforce or attempt to enforce any federal enactment or enforcement action, it'll be punishable as a Class A misdemeanor first offense and a Class C felony for second offense.
Okay. Yeah, well, that's, you know, all I can say, Senator, is keep up the good work.
Thank you very much. It's good to talk to you.
Same here.
Thank you, Kurt. Take care.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Tennessee Firearms Freedom Act, that was originally passed in 2009, correct?
It was, and at that time it had to do with pretty much interstate commerce in that the 2009 Act said that any gun, ammunition, or accessory that was made in Tennessee and marked made in Tennessee, as long as it stayed in Tennessee, that the feds had nothing to say about it. Of course, as soon as we passed the bill, which it did pass in both houses, it is on the books today, you know, the firearms dealers in Tennessee started getting letters from Washington saying, you better not, you know, do this. So, you know, you better abide by our laws, which goes against, to me, the anti-commandeering doctrine that, they can come in here.
Go ahead, finish the anti-commandeering doctrine.
You know, the very idea that federal agents could come in here and enforce their laws against our gun rights is just unfathomable. And we've had, you know, some sheriffs have come out to say that not in my county you won't.
Well, let me ask you this. Is there anything to be done to put teeth in that law? Because I remember right after that law came out, I remember hearing ATF sent letters to all the dealers and basically told them to disregard the law. Is there any teeth in that law if right now? I mean, it's on the books.
It
was signed.
It would have to be challenged, probably. In Montana, right now, that we copied their bill. I worked with that sponsor. We passed the same bill. We just happened to pass it before they did. They're now, I believe, in the state appeals or Supreme Court one. I think it's the Supreme Court waiting for a final decision on that law. Theirs was a test case. I mean, you know, all of this was to test the federal government, to try to tell them you need to back off. And we should know soon how. No, they don't. They just keep taking more and more of our freedoms and our liberties away from us. You know, that's one thing that I'm cognizant of every time we pass a bill in Tennessee is, you know, does this take more of our freedom and our liberty away?
Now, so the changes you're going to propose to this law, let's talk about those. What are you going to add to the law?
Well, the original one said that as long as they stay in Tennessee, the federal government didn't have any say, but we're going about it now to say that to create an offense to knowingly enforce or attempt to enforce any federal enactment or enforcement action. It goes along the same lines as anti-commandeering, you know. And I'm going to talk to John about maybe changing some of this language to include those Supreme Court cases because, you know, it's pretty much the same thing. Washington makes laws, and they expect us to enforce them in Tennessee. It has to do with, you know, any, and we're changing it from made in Tennessee. We're changing the original act to say any gun, ammunition, or accessory that exists here today, you know, the federal government doesn't have any say. We're not going to enforce their laws.
Now, for the portion where it talks about any, originally it said anything manufactured here.
Right.
It's not under federal jurisdiction. What about, was there ever any thought, and what do you think the possibility of, I know all firearms dealers have to have a federal license, okay?
Right.
But, and of course, that currently allows them to sell in the state as well, although I'm sure there's state hoops they have to jump through. But a state firearms dealer license, could you see any way that would be beneficial to where, hey, you know, I'm gonna be a state dealer. I'm only going to sell stuff that's made here in Tennessee, and so I need a state firearms dealer's license. What do you think about that idea?
I don't know. I'll have to discuss that with John Harris. You know, I hate to agree any time that more regulations are a good thing. You know, I think as far as the feds controlling the businesses in our state, the firearms businesses, you know, I'm totally against the federal government having that much say. We'll talk to John about that and see what he thinks.
I mean, I understand it would cause a conflict, but, you know, basically it would be, hey, you have a state license, therefore, you know, I mean, it. I understand the first law didn't get a whole lot of hasn't been tested yet, and I understand that's in the process. But it just seems to me like if you're going to say you've got ammunition and weapons that are made in the state, therefore not under federal jurisdiction, I would think that you wouldn't have to have a federal license to sell them. You could get by with a state license. But just
exactly, and I agree. But we'll talk about that and see what happens. I don't know if we'll get any further this year than we got last year with this law. But, you know, the newspapers don't think so. But I always have hope that, you know, God will shine a light on the legislature and make them see the light on these things, that we're losing all of our freedoms and our liberties in this country. And now we have a scary government in Washington.
Oh, yes, we do.
People are getting scared. They're afraid what the federal government's going to do. You're hearing all kinds of stories from up north about people being stopped. Read recently about a gentleman from, I think, the South going up, and he had a gun permit, but he didn't have his gun with him, and they put him through all kinds of things, you know, because he just had a permit. So it's like, you know,
yeah.
You're guilty just because you have a gun permit.
Yeah, it's ridiculous, absolutely ridiculous. Let's assume that you're listening to conservativenationmedia.com, you're a conservative. You love America just like we do, and you don't want to get caught short in case the leftist government drops the ball and leaves the country and your family unable to get the basics of life in an emergency. Since that's the case, you're going to want a supply depot to get everything from patriotic gear to survival necessities to outfit and protect you and your family. And your pipeline of those essentials is right here at conservativenationmedia.com. Just go to our website, conservativenationmedia.com, and click on the Patriot Depot banner. That will take you to the world's best-known warehouse for all your conservative and emergency survival needs. Wave your flag and be ready for whatever the future holds starting right now. Just go to conservativenationmedia.com and click on the Patriot Depot banner to join the conservative revolution, where America always wins. All right, we're up against a hard break. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Whether you're on active duty, a veteran, or just admire American Armed Forces, there's no better place to get the widest variety of militaria than at Highlands Militaria. Highlands Militaria is one of America's premier distributors of Fox tactical gear and outdoor products. Veteran-owned and operated, Highlands Militaria offers new and used uniforms and insignia from World War II, Korea, Vietnam, and today. With an emphasis on airborne and special operations insignia, gear, collectibles, and uniforms. If you need to replace a cherished badge or unit patch, or just want to gear up for your next outdoor adventure, go to Highlands Militaria at stores.ebay.com/Highlands-Militaria, where you'll find the best supply of the military gear you need. Shipping is always free with one-day handling time, and your satisfaction is guaranteed. Highlands Militaria at stores.ebay.com/Highlands-Militaria, and thank you for your service.
First thing I remember knowing was a lonesome whistle blowing and a youngin's dream of growing up to ride on a freight train leaving town, not knowing where I'm bound, and no one could change my mind but Mama tried.
Welcome back to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176. That's 718-305-7176, and we're talking with State Senator Mae Beavers. Senator Beavers, there's another topic that we want to get to, the issue of Sudafed. I guess they're wanting to make it a controlled substance, essentially, in Tennessee.
After you get a 30-day supply, they want you to have to go to the doctor to get a prescription. And I, for one, have real problems with that. I've been fighting that for the last several years. I was the author of the NPLEX bill. I carried that. We got it passed, which kind of connects us with 12 or 15 states around us to make sure that when you go into the pharmacy to buy pseudoephedrine that you haven't bought too much. And that's to prevent the smurfing that's been going on and people buying too much, making meth with it. And let me say, that's an inconvenience enough for people, because some people, I've had calls complaining that the pharmacist wanted to treat them like a criminal. Something that was put in that bill that I didn't agree with was that the pharmacist could ask them questions about why they needed pseudoephedrine to try to determine if they were on meth or if they were trying to get it for somebody else to make meth. I don't think a person should have to pay for a doctor's visit even after a 30-day supply. They're trying to put a limit on how much you can buy during that 30 days. And it's in grams. It's something I don't understand, but I understand they don't even make boxes in the size that they're talking about. I've had a lot of personal experience because I use Claritin D all the time. I have really bad allergies, as, you know, most people in Middle Tennessee do. I usually go in and get a box of 20, which means, you know, I go to the drugstore every, you know, 20 to 30 days to buy Claritin D. I ask for the 12 hours since I don't take it at night. The last time I went, they didn't have a box of 20. They only had a box of 10, but they wouldn't sell me two boxes of 10. it's insane what's going on now and the difficulty that people are having getting the medication. You know, to put these other restrictions on it is just going to make it more difficult for people. I will be opposing the legislation that has been proposed, and we're doing a little investigation of our own to find out. We've heard there are other things that people are buying, are making meth from, and so we're looking into those, doing some research. But 80% of the meth is coming out of Mexico. The states that have passed prescription, they've not seen any real change in meth labs. Actually, before some of them, in some states, before they passed the prescription, they were actually seeing a decline before the prescription requirement passed. And so, you know, it really didn't show that it was making much difference. You're punishing the consumer instead of punishing the criminal. We need to make the punishment stiffer. We need to make sure that we're enforcing the meth offender registry that we passed a few years ago. People that have been in the meth before go on a registry so that, you know, you can tell who they are. I just cannot see punishing the consumer any more than we already have.
Well, now, we've got a meth problem, well, across the state, but for instance, where I live here in Stewart County, we've definitely got a meth problem. Right down the street a couple of years ago, they were making meth. They busted them there. Maybe a mile and a half, not even a mile and a half from here, in the other direction, there was a meth house. So it is a problem, but like you say, you can't take something that's a commonly used medicine and just make it a controlled substance. That's ridiculous. And you, back to your point of the meth registry, you have to wonder how many people are being let out over and over. You know, they're going through the little they do a little merry-go-round thing. They arrest them, they put them away for a while, they let them back out, they do the same thing. It's over and over again. Well, while the justice system is failing to keep those people where they need to be, they're going to punish the average person because of the material that's in the Sudafed. That is crazy.
That's exactly right. That's what's getting ready to happen. And let me say this too. The TBI right now on prescription drugs, OxyContin, those kind of things, they have a database, but they stay 3 weeks behind on their database. How is adding another item to go into that database that they're running 3 weeks behind on going to solve a problem? To me, it's going to get worse. It's going to make it easier for people to get the pseudoephedrine, in my mind. You know, if the TBI had real-time tracking like we do at the pharmacies now with the NPLEX system, they'd be able to do a better job of controlling the prescription drugs that are on our street now, but they're not doing it. So that's something I'm really going to be looking at and speaking out against, too. I said, you know, I guess everybody will hate me before the year's over, but I just can't see letting these things go and putting more restrictions on people's liberties in this country.
Well, you know, speaking of that, I think there's going to be another asset forfeiture bill in the I know that somebody intended to file one. I don't know if it got filed in time or will get filed in time. You know, they call it policing for profit. I-40,
yes.
One direction, the dope goes one direction, and the money comes the other direction. And apparently law enforcement is onto that. And they usually pull over the people that are on the way back with the money. That's the story that I'm hearing. I've seen some video of that. I've talked to some people with some organizations that are, you know, think policing for profit's a bad idea, a bad thing, and a violation of rights and everything else. And it just seems to me if the whole goal was to stop drugs, then they would be focusing on the side of I-40 where the drugs are going rather than just focusing on the side where the money's coming back. And in some cases, you know, it's basically, hey, you've got all this money. Oh, wow, we suspect that's drug money. They're able to take the money and, you know, even if they don't find any drugs, they take the money. The guy might be from out of state. He may have been here to buy a car, or I think one guy was coming up from Texas or somewhere to buy a bunch of hay, and he basically lost his money to the state or to that particular county. So,
and see, there are things going on in this country that just should not be going on.
No, no, that's just flat out wrong. And hey, don't get me wrong, I'm not a pro drug guy. I'm not a legalized drug guy. I don't think we've necessarily, this war on drugs hasn't gone so well the way we're fighting it. Or got to wonder, are we fighting it if we're focusing on getting the money, and then of course that money, the police departments are able to use it for whatever. So,
well, I mean, what is the probable cause? Just because you have money now, is probable cause to take your money and arrest you?
Yeah.
That
now, well,
they
take the money. Okay. Now, if they don't find anything, they don't actually arrest the guy. But the guy has to go to court to get his money back.
Right.
It's a civil forfeiture. I mean, it's not a there does not have to be an accompanying criminal charge. And that's
which means he's probably going to have to hire an attorney. He's going to have to go to all this trouble of maybe coming all the way back there to go to court. And it's just not right. Somebody should have to reimburse them for all of their trouble. It shouldn't happen in the first place.
No, it definitely shouldn't. ConservativeNationMedia.com is growing, and we couldn't think of a better way to expand our lineup than to give our very own Bing Fisher his very own show. Uncle Bing Fisher brings his engineer's insight and love of America to American by Design. Sunday evenings at 6 p.m. Eastern, 5 Central on ConservativeNationMedia.com. So stay with Conservative Nation Media 7 days a week, since we're making some big changes and we're just getting started. American by Design with Bing Fisher, Sundays at 6 Eastern, 5 Central on ConservativeNationMedia.com, where America always wins. You're listening to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176, and we're talking to Senator Mae Beavers. Back to the Sudafed issue. Now, what are you going to propose legislation, or does somebody already have a bill in the works to counter that?
We're looking at legislation to stiffen the penalty instead of punishing the consumer. You know, this is one of the governor's initiatives to require the prescription, so I don't know. I know the TBI has been working on him for 2 or 3 years now to do this, and they call it a compromise. I don't call it a compromise when you have to go pay a doctor for a doctor's visit to get an over-the-counter medicine. You know, it's not like the OxyContin and things that are scheduled drugs that, you know, are prolific on our streets because we don't have any real-time tracking of doctors, you know, prescriptions and things. Pseudoephedrine is something we need for our allergies. We can't help it if they take that product and extract the pseudoephedrine in order to make meth. As I said, there are other products that they are starting to get meth from, and we're doing some research on that and hope to be able to prove that, hey, it's not all coming from prescription or from the allergy medication. It's coming from other sources, too, that have the right chemicals in them.
Yeah, and there's probably any number of things they can use, and I'm sure they use more things than Sudafed now. I'm sure that's not the only thing they use.
Right. And, you know, I've always had a question about how the TBI is counting labs. It used to be that you had to have a big, huge lab to make pseudoephedrine. They made large amounts at one time. Now a bottle is called a lab. So, you know, I'm trying to find out how sheriffs are – counting. I talked to one of my sheriffs this weekend, and I said, how do you count it? If you stop a car and it has 10 bottles in the back, how do you count that? He said, we count it as one lab. He said, I don't know what they do with it, you know, when it gets to Nashville. But I'm trying to verify just how they count those. But with a lot of the meth coming out of Mexico, we're not going to stop it completely.
Right. Well,
I heard there's big factories down there making meth.
Yeah, we're not doing too good at stopping anything from Mexico. You know, we're not doing too good at stopping Mexicans, meth, drugs, weapons,
right?
Oh, and then you have the OTMs, the other than Mexicans that are getting across the border too.
Right.
By the way, just a quick note. I got an email earlier today from a friend, and Dr. Suba Ali, who is Samar Ali's father. Somebody's finally making some connections here. I'm going to read just a little bit of it to you and to the others out there. He is the chairman of the Jerusalem Fund, and their organization advocates BDS, which is boycott, divestment, and sanctions against Israel as a way to end Israel as a Jewish state, to destroy it by any means possible. Okay, the Hamas charter. Now, Hamas is a terrorist organization, even the federal government recognizes it as a terrorist organization. And their charter was posted on the Jerusalem Fund website. And Dr. Ali is the chairman of this website, the chairman of the Jerusalem Fund. And he is the father of Governor Haslam's appointee, Samar Ali, to the Economic Development Council of Tennessee, the international division. So just... that's kind of popping back up. That was on front page. That was an article from Front Page Magazine. All right, so it's not just what's coming across; it's what's already here, and we just need to remember that and be alert. And that's another one of the governor's appointees.
Well, but people, I think, are slowly waking up. There's still a lot of people out there that. They may not like what's going on, but they're not doing anything about it. They're not letting their legislators know. They're not getting in touch with their congressmen. You know, it's going to take something big, I think, at this point to change this country, to take us back to the Constitution that we knew before it was changed by this group that's in Washington.
Yeah. Well, it's been a long time coming. I mean, we can't blame everything on the current administration. The last administration wasn't great either, but it's, you know, really the last 50 years, 70 years, really going back to the Wilson administration even further, 100 years. You know, the first thing, what were the first things they did was the income tax, because you had to have the money. And so
Right. You
take it from 1913 on, and as the government gained more power, we retained less freedom, and that's just the way it works. And so many things now are ingrained, and, you know, the textbook debate, for instance, hats off to those citizens who got involved with that. And I'm sure I don't know if you were at the hearings, I'm not sure if you were on that committee, but I'm sure you know about it. These were basically, they were just everyday citizens that were concerned about what they were finding in their textbooks. And they reviewed these textbooks that our state is considering adopting. Well, the sad thing is, you know, they found all these problems, mistakes, errors, bias, anti-American slant, anti-Christian, pro-Islamic slants. But the sad thing is we had teachers who reviewed these same books and didn't find any of those things. So that's, you know, we got a problem here. We've got a lot of problems.
Exactly. And I saw today where a Hillsdale professor has written a book about what's going on with our textbooks. You know, I've read a number of articles today online about what's going on with our education system. You know what? We got to get a handle on this. Are we going to be ruined? I'm for Tennessee standards, for Common Core Washington standards. And I know a lot of parents are beginning to wake up. We have a parents group in Wilson County that's gotten active. They have a website. I know my daughter-in-law in Murfreesboro has gotten involved, and a lot of the parents are telling her things, and they're sharing information. So the more this information gets out, I'm hoping that the better chance we have of trying to change things in Nashville. I know it's going to be hard. I know I've been told that the Senate caucus is probably half and half on that. So it's going to take people getting in touch with their senators and their representatives to make them realize what's going on. And, you know, time is short. We've got to do something about this now. I can thankfully say that I was one of those that voted against Race to the Top when it first came through because of the federal funding, and there were no details. And now I'm thankful that I did, but unfortunately we have it anyway, and we're having to fight it on this end.
Yeah. Now, what are you hearing about Common Core? You say that's about a 50-50 split in the Senate?
That's what I hear. Personally, I'm working on legislation that would repeal that law. I'm sure.
I imagine there's pressure out of the governor's office on that as well.
Well, I haven't filed it yet, so they don't know. But we'll see. I'm sure as soon as they do, that there will be pressure.
Yeah. Well, we definitely, that is, Common Core definitely needs to go. And I don't know, I think our state would be capable of coming up. And, I mean, we do have some good teachers. We do have some people, good people involved in education. But, you know, when you're talking about standards like that, since they overlooked some obvious problems with the textbooks, I would like to see more involvement of parents, you know, having the opportunity to develop. I mean, for instance, the group that did this, the Tennessee Textbook Organization, you know, I'd like to see them develop curriculum. I think they could develop a much better curriculum. And if you think about it, the textbooks didn't get bad overnight. They're certainly worse now than what they were. And like I said, the teachers overlooked a lot of these problems. It also means that, but these things have been going on for years and years. For years and years, the State Board of Education has overlooked these problems. So they are part of the problem.
That's why they're working on legislation to kind of redo the textbook commission. I think parents should certainly be represented on that board. I'm not sure what the legislation that they're coming up with is going to look like, but part of our problem is that some of our teachers don't realize what all's in the books. They're leaving history out of the books. With a math problem now under Common Core, it's more about the process than the right answer. You know, if you can do the right answer in your head and just write that down, you may miss the problem, but somebody that puts the process down, and even though they may get the answer wrong, will get it counted right. You know, math used to be absolute, you know, and apparently it's not anymore. So it's very worrisome to me. I have a third-grade grandson that's in Discovery School in Murfreesboro, and he has done really well. They have to test to get in kindergarten, and they move at the speed, you know, of other children with their mental ability. At the end of first grade, he was reading fourth grade level. Third grade this year, all they're doing is testing all day long. I mean, I just can't comprehend how you think you're teaching children when all they're doing is taking tests. And then the expense to our, you know, I've heard that, well, we can't give up all this Washington money. Well, why not? If you look at what it's going to cost all of our counties for just the computer system alone, $500,000 from Wilson County this year, $800,000 is what they're supposed to have to spend next year. Murfreesboro City School System borrowed $5.2 million just to get iPads and computers for kids so they could take all these tests. I mean, and, you know, we know how fast technology moves. You know, when are these computers going to be outdated, and what are we in for? This is going to go down to the local level taxpayers.
Oh, yeah, the property taxes. And I can tell you most counties already have problems because the schools are the most expensive item on any county's budget. All right, and for instance,
yeah,
in Stewart County where I'm at, you know, it's no exception, but we're also in the process of building the jail. So we already had to raise property taxes. They already had to pass a bond. You know, we're already millions of dollars, I think $30 million or something like that in debt, and we're a small county. So you mentioned computers. Once you do Common Core, you're probably going to have to upgrade your computers at least every few years. You know, where are you going to get the money? You know, you can only take so much in property taxes. You can only raise sales tax so much before you start having diminishing returns. You know, people said, hey, you know, I can't pay the property taxes and the sales tax here. Now, granted, we're, you know, a lot cheaper here than someplace like Davidson County, but still, you know, limited number of people, not necessarily a lot of high earners in the county overall. So, yeah, it's a problem. And, They need to look at that. And it bothers me, too. We complain about federal government, but state government's always got its hand out. We got to get our share.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would like to see Tennessee pass a law. And I'm just put a bug in your ear. If it's not a federal program, if it's not one of the items in Article 1, Section 8 that the federal government is supposed to do, then I'd like to see Tennessee not participate or accept money for something that the federal government is not supposed to do. I know that's a hard sell, but that's what we have to do. We can't hold them totally to blame when our hand is always out.
I agree. I couldn't agree more. Anytime the federal government is involved, it's going to cost more and more. And, you know, when I was on the county commission, that's where I started. I saw that from Nashville. And we would complain about the mandates that Nashville put on the counties. And then you get to the state level and you find out, you know, there's mandates coming down to you, too, from the federal government. But I try to be very conscious of what we vote on for the local level because I've been there before, and I know how hard it is. I've always said the local level is absolutely the hardest elected office that you can serve in because you're right there, and, you know, people see it more, I think, that it's affecting their everyday lives.
Yeah, well, I just think that, you know, and the money, the other thing that bothers me is we know we're $17 trillion in debt. We know that our economy is a mess, and I think many people believe there's going to be a crash. So how can any state legislature in good conscience sign on for more federal money, especially for something that the federal government's not even supposed to be involved with?
Who knows how long Washington's going to be able to send that money? That's always been the question with our road funds in Tennessee. We send a dollar up there, and we were only getting like 90 cents back on the dollar. We're getting the full dollar now, but, you know, how long before Washington says, oh, well, we need this for Obamacare, so we're going to take half your road money, you know? I think we're in perilous times. It's something for us to pray about.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think it's going to take that, and it is going to take something, radical on our part in terms of returning things to the way they need to be. So hopefully,
right.
Hopefully it can all be done peacefully. We'll see.
I hope so.
We've got about 2 minutes left, and I appreciate you staying with us for this full hour, and I'm going to give you the last word for the next 2 minutes. Anything you want to talk about or anything you want to let the public know about?
Well, you know, I've just asked people to contact their senators and representatives to, get their support on this Obamacare bill that we're trying to pass. It's called the Affordable Care Act Noncompliance Act. Basically, they just need to tell their legislator that it's the Beavers-Pody bill that keeps us from participating with Obamacare. And we need their support. You know, I would hope that it would pass at least with the unanimous support of the Republicans. And we need their help in getting it done.
Well, I agree with you, and I hope it happens. I appreciate how hard you fight for everything that's right up there, and appreciate you coming on. I will try to get back with you and, you know, have you on at least a couple more times during session, and just thank you for all you do.
Thank you, Dave. Thank you for what you do.
Well, I appreciate it, and glad to have you, proud to have you on, and look forward to having you back. You have a good night, and thanks again.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Take care. All right, real quick, before the break, February 27th, Sheriff Mack will be in Jackson, Tennessee at Grant Hall at Union University, 6 p.m. Also, we'll have John Harris from the Tennessee Firearms Association. This is a fundraiser from the 7th and 8th District Coalitions. They've pulled together to bring you this. So Sheriff Mack took the case all the way to Supreme Court. As a matter of fact, in reference to what Senator Beavers was talking about, his issue was states cannot be forced. A county sheriff cannot be forced to enforce federal firearms laws. And that's what he took to the Supreme Court and won on. So he will be here. And we're trying to set up something a little earlier that day to get the local law enforcement involved as well. But that's February 27th, Jackson, Tennessee, Grant Hall, Union University, 6 p.m. And also John Harris from the Tennessee Firearms Association will be speaking as well. Tentatively, depending on the schedule, because they're in session, Representative Judd Matheny and Representative Joe Carr. So, all right, don't go away. We'll be right back on Inside Tennessee after this short break.
If you love America, you're among friends here. ConservativeNationRadio.org.
Welcome back to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176. That's 718-305-7176. For our second hour, we have Bill Hemrick with us, and Bill is going to talk to us about Obama's czars. How are you doing tonight, Bill?
Very well, David. How are you?
Doing great. Appreciate you coming on. And I don't even know how many czars there are anymore. It seems like, I don't know, 30, 40? What's the count? What are we up to?
Well, you know, the fact of the matter is I have not done any upgrades on these czars since 2012. In 2009, 1 year after Obama got elected, he appointed about three dozen of them. And I paid little to no attention at all until about 2012 when Glenn Beck had a show, and he dedicated that show to the czars, and he was talking about Van Jones, who was a self-proclaimed communist, and Obama had appointed him to the Green Czar job, whatever the heck that is, and I couldn't believe that a U.S. president, you know, he might be seen with a communist, but he would never appoint one. And that stirred my interest. And then because Beck made such a deal out of it, CBS ran a story with it right away after that talked about the czars and what their responsibilities were. And the main point that they were trying to make was that the czars reported directly to Obama and had nothing to do with Congress. They would simply bypass Congress. It's hard to believe, you know it?
That's scary. You know, he already ignores the Constitution, and now he has these appointees who, you know, don't even pay lip service to worrying about the Constitution.
Well, I don't know if he even knows how to spell the Constitution, but please understand, I have not updated this, the numbers or the names of the czars since 2012. And as a matter of fact, I don't have to. The damage was done the day that he appointed dates. We'll get into them a little later on. And you can see they have a common thread. And the common thread, the nice thing I can say about it is that a lot of them will profess that they are members of a communistic party, whether it be a national or whether it be a state communistic party. And the question that I ask is why would a president that was born in this country, loves Jesus Christ as we love Jesus Christ, and is proud of America as we are proud of America, could appoint such people to advise him on important governmental issues? I don't understand that. But maybe I'm...
Well, I mean, you know, I mean, we know that that's, as far as his religious beliefs, he's made it clear If he's not a Muslim, he's definitely pro-Muslim. If you look at the church that he went to, you're talking about Reverend Wright's church. I don't think that actually qualifies as a church in anybody, in any sane person's mind anyway. And it's, you know, he made it clear. He wants to radically transform the country, and that's what he's doing. Now, to the czars, can you, is there something that you can tell me? Do you have anything in terms of specific rulings that they've handed, or decisions they've made, policies they've put into effect?
Well, let me start with this. Whenever I heard the word czars, I always related it to, seriously, Russia. I was so naive that I didn't even believe that we had czars until I heard it on the Beck Show. And so I did some research on it, and Franklin Delano Roosevelt was the first one to introduce them. And he had 19 czars, and 17 of them were not confirmed by the Senate. And I can run all the way through it, but the last one was George Bush, and he had 49 czars, with 18 of them not being confirmed.
Okay. Let me ask you something. Did FDR actually call them czars?
Yes, called them czars.
So wow. Okay, I'd never heard that term until sometime in the 80s. I mean, and I think it was, I think Bill Bennett, they called him the education czar. That's the first time I remember hearing that phrase applied to an American official that was appointed. Wow, okay, I didn't know.
I could be wrong in that, but that's the way I interpret it when I look this all up. But Bush, believe it or not, has had more czars than any other president, and even more than Obama. Obama has 43, and 33 of them were never confirmed. And besides all of that, we have no idea what they're being paid. It's kind of a scary situation because they hold a lot of power, as you're going to see, And for what reason, I don't know. When the country started, you had the Federalist and the Anti-Federalist, and one wanted a large central government, one wanted a small central government. That was John Adams and Thomas Jefferson. And the reason that Adams gave for a large central government was he felt that the country was so new and the state so independent of one another that they couldn't survive without a large central government. And I can understand that reasoning, and at least he had one. Why we want to grow the government so big today, I can't see a rhyme or a reason for that, and I certainly don't see the benefit to the overall American people. I can see a benefit to the few that are getting cell phones free, but other than that, Dave, I do not see an advantage, with the exception.
Well,
of
let's talk a little bit about the czars. What are some of the positions they hold?
All right. Well, let me get into it. Richard Holbrooke. He's the Afghanistan czar. He's an ultra-liberal, anti-gun, pro-abortion, and pro-drug legislation. He wants to dissolve the Second Amendment. And what's hurtful is he was the former governor of New Mexico. And then I'll just go down the list here. Ed Montgomery, the auto recovery czar. He's a radical anti-black activist. And he pushes affirmative actions for jobs, preferably just for the blacks. He was the dean of the University of Maryland Business School, which taught U.S. businesses cause world poverty.
What?
You heard me. He's the dean. He was the dean. And you can look this up at the University of Maryland, the business school. He was also, this should light your fire, he was also an ACORN board member and a communistic divorce club member, which it's been dissolved but then reinstated under the name of the Young Worker Liberation Group. What does that tell you? And he appoints these people as overseer of the manufacturing of our automobiles. Well, that's General Motors and Chrysler. Chrysler now is totally owned by the labor unions, but that's what this gentleman, Ed Montgomery, was pushing. It seems that, and that's where a lot of our stimulus money went, was to sure that the union members receive their pay while everybody else was losing their jobs. And your listeners should be very aware of things like that, because they're very detrimental, and you don't know where it's going to stop, because we don't have a Congress today that is doing anything about it. And that, along with executive orders, you tell me. And then we have Jeffrey Crowley. He's the AIDS czar. Now, why do we need an AIDS
czar? The AIDS czar. Now, I'm just going to go out on a limb here and say that this guy is probably a flamer, big time. And so we're going to legitimize this perversion that has all these known health risks to it, which means where we're going to be on, we're going to be basically getting done over. And that's the cleaned up version of that, but we're going to have to pay for it.
Absolutely. He is. He's a radical homosexual, a gay rights activist, believes in gay marriage, and has special status for homosexuals only, including complete free health care for all gays. Now, Dave, you know, I've had a second look at the gay population. You know what Christ tells us to do. You know, you're supposed to love the sinner and hate the sin, and I do. I have a personal relationship with a gentleman, and I found out recently he's gay. Under no circumstances does he have to wonder what I think, because I've told him. But I liked him before I found out.
Say it isn't so. I would have never imagined that.
Right. But, you know, I now think there's three types of homosexuals. The A type. It's the ones that you see that is just shoving it down your throat. They want to teach it in our schools. They want every piece of legislation geared their way. They'll take over Disneyland or Disney World, you know, for a day and parade half naked down the streets. Those are what gives homosexuals a bad name, in my opinion. And then you have the Anderson Coopers of the world, you know, the guys that are celebrities that are gay and just want to be left alone, but because of the A-type coming in and persuading them to step out so that they can justify their cause, they do that. And then the C-type just want to be left alone. They don't want to push it on you. You don't bother them, we won't bother you. Now, I'm not saying that's right. I still think homosexuality is a detestable thing. But the fact is that we grew up with it, even back in the 50s. It was fine because nobody really knew about it. And no special treatment. But it's all different now. And you have a president now that... Well, I won't go that far, but I wonder about the boy. Really do. I should
call him boy. Yeah, well, he definitely seems to support that agenda. What other czars out there? While I've got the mic here, I've got to do something here. America is still the freest country on earth for now, anyway. And those of us who love America know that the Constitution is the reason for our liberties. ConservativeNationMedia.com isn't going to let those leftists in D.C. take our freedom away, and our constitutional expert Matthew Opalowski is leading the charge. Join Matthew every Thursday night at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 Central, for the Liberty and Constitution community to learn about our rights and freedoms under the greatest governing document of all time. and what you can do to protect your liberty under the Bill of Rights. The Liberty and Constitution Community with Matthew Opalowski, Thursdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 Central on ConservativeNationMedia.com, where America always wins. You're listening to Inside Tennessee and Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176, and we're talking to Bill Hemrick about Obama's czars. Okay, we just talked about the flaming czar, I mean the AIDS czar. What are some of the other czars? And specifically, if you have something that you know that they have put into effect, let's hear about that.
Well, yeah, okay. Well, let's take David Hayes, for example. Now, this gentleman was confirmed. He was in the Clinton administration. He is the water czar, the California water czar, part of the senior fellows of Radical Environmentalist Group for Progress Policies. He has no training or expertise in the water management whatsoever. He's the one that shut the water off in Northern California and dried up all that fertile land, some of the most fertile land that we had for agriculture. Shut the water off because of a smelt fish. You know how many people lost?
About as long as your finger, right?
Yeah. But how many people lost their jobs, their livelihood, everything? And this fits right into the plan of Mr. Obama and this administration, because if he can put people out of work, and they become dependent upon the government. And that's exactly what I see happening here, and that's exactly why I think this administration is doing the things that it's doing. One of the things, if I could, I'd like to back up on some of these things. Holbrooke was never confirmed, and, you know, we don't know how much he's getting paid. Neither was Montgomery. Jeff Crowley, the AIDS czar, he wasn't confirmed, but he's making $102,000 a year.
Wow.
So
some are confirmed and some are not confirmed, and we don't know what any of them are making.
Well, we know what five of them are making, but there's only about five or six that are confirmed by the Senate. And I'll save the worst one for last, and you'll see. But Alan Burns.
Okay. Well, hey, Bill, let's go ahead and hold up because I've got to take a break. Take a short break. Don't go away. We'll be right back on Inside Tennessee.
The Internet's official rhino hunting safari.
Been looking for an online gathering place? You know, a familiar screen, does everything you're used to, except give you grief for being a conservative? You gotta try the Tea Party community. At TPC, you'll know how everything works from the very first minute, and you'll probably find a lot of friends who are already there. Organize, communicate, share ideas, upcoming events, pictures, and videos. The Tea Party community connects and empowers like-minded, politically conservative people like you. Sign up today at teapartycommunity.com.
Hello, I'm Jennifer Meadows, your host on Grit and Grace. Please join us every Tuesday night from 10 to 12 Eastern for an honest look at the top political and cultural issues that are affecting Americans today. That's Grit and Grace for conservative analysis that is smart and entertaining. Tuesdays, 9 to 11 p.m. Central, 10 to 12 Eastern on ConservativeNationMedia.com.
Welcome back to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. Phone number is 718-305-7176. And we're talking with Bill Hemrick about Obama's czars. Back to you, Bill. Let's get back to the rundown on the czars and the damage they're doing.
Yeah. Well, the next one we have is Alan Brunson. He's our border czar. He's the one.
Well, he's failing. We got to fire that guy.
Well, what he is doing that's really good for the Obama administration is suing the states. You know, our Constitution does say that if you're going to sue the federal government, if it's going to sue the states, it only has one recourse, not an appellate court, not a district court, but the Supreme Court of the land. That's where they have to take that case. As of yet,
yeah.
I don't think our Supreme Court has heard it, except for an appellate court. And that's unconstitutional. And the thing that bothers me the most about that is where in the world is our Congress? They know this.
They're AWOL. You put them all together, they don't have a spine. And I hate to say it, but with the possible exception of Scott Desjarlais in Tennessee has some of the most worthless legislators in Congress, in my opinion, in terms of fighting.
I hate to agree with you because on this last budget deal, look, 7 out of 9 voted to increase it. For what?
Yeah.
That wasn't enough money that they had last year. They, I bet, you know, I could go on about 1,000 different things. Let me stick to this Borders in our gear guy. He was a failed superintendent of the San Diego schools. He's an ultra-liberal friend of Hillary Clinton's. He served as the Borders are under Janet Reno. And his main function is to keep that border open. I guess everyone that comes across the border is a potential vote for Obama. He's not been confirmed.
Yeah.
No way of knowing what his pay scale is. Ron Blum, the car czar. I don't know the difference between the auto recovery czar and the car czar, but we got one. He's an auto union worker, anti-business, and anti-nuclear. You know, he has worked hard to force U.S. automakers out of business. But now he's fine because he's with Chrysler as an executive. That's Mr. Blum. He's not been confirmed, and we don't know what he gets paid either. And then you have Dennis Ross. He's the Iran czar. And he's doing a wonderful job, too. Not confirmed. We don't know what he's getting paid. He believes that the U.S. policy is the cause of war in the Middle East. He is anti-gun and completely pro-abortion. You wonder why God has kind of been put on the shelf in this country? As long as we keep killing his children, I don't know if we're going to get him back anytime soon.
Yeah, well, I don't think we can put God on a shelf, and I don't think he's going to sit idly by forever. I think there's a price to pay for those type of things, and I think we're starting to pay some of it now with Obama. I think we're going to pay more as the time goes on if we don't wake up and turn around.
I don't think we're going to wake up. I think those free gifts that Mr. Obama has given people are more enticing than what gave us the foundation for this country. And that was Judeo-Christian values. You can't convince me that God wasn't a part of this nation when it started.
No doubt in my mind.
Anyway, you got Lynn Rosenthal, the domestic violence czar. She's the director of the National Network to End Domestic Violence Against Women. She thinks that all males should be castrated. She's not confirmed, and we don't know what she's getting paid. Mr. Gil Kowalski, I guess, is how you pronounce it. He's the drug czar. I'll bet you he's made a lot of money. He's a devoted lobbyist for gun regulation laws and supports legalization of all drugs. He's also believed that no American should own a firearm. And
he's a drug pusher czar, right? So he's a drug pusher czar.
Well, ask Eric Holder what he thinks of him. this Fast and Furious deal that we can't get a handle on either because of our illustrious Congress. Anyway, he was the chief of police of Seattle, Washington. He has been confirmed, but they won't tell us what he makes.
And does he get a cut of the drugs? That's what I want to know, too. Does he get a cut of that?
I don't know. I have a picture of him here holding a big bag of it, and there's a marijuana insignia on the bag.
I thought you were going to say you had a picture of him holding a bong or something.
Well, and then Carol Browner. We've all heard of her. The energy and environmentalist are a political radical again, former head of the EPA. She is known for anti-business activists, strong anti-gun ownership, and the EPA is exactly that. It's a killer of businesses. And, again, why? Why? You take a common guy off the street, and I guarantee you he probably could fix most of our ills in 6 or 7 months. This guy can't. He just adds to them every day. You know, I think, okay, it can't get worse than yesterday. And I'll be darned. He makes a liar out of me every day because it does.
He's been in office five years. You should know that by now.
I know, but gee whiz. And now he has a pen, and he has a phone, and he has a desk. The only thing, I think what we should all do as conservative Republicans, get together and buy this guy a gold crown and send it to him, and then see if he can throw it at the feet of Christ.
If I'm going to buy something and send it to him, I can guarantee it will not be a golden crown.
Well, I'll hold my tongue in my cheek here, Dave. I know. Cameron Davis. Here's another one. A Great Lakes czar.
A what? Say that again?
Great Lakes. The Great Lakes.
Great Lakes czar.
Okay. Great Lakes, you know, fresh water. Why do we need a czar?
Yeah.
I don't know. But he's a Chicago radical, and that explains it. He is in Chicago.
Yeah.
That's right, in Lake Michigan, so we got to have a czar, I guess. And
yeah.
He blames George Bush for poisoning the waters that all minorities have to drink. You know, I thought that what went on. I thought it went out when they quit putting signs on the water fountains that said blacks and whites. But I guess not, because if that's the truth, man, I could inadvertently one day drink some of that water and die. My goodness.
Well, if George Bush was doing that, he'd done a pathetic job, because I haven't heard of a bunch of dying. So.
Me neither. But he's also an Acorn board member. Acorn is no longer, you know. I mean, they've changed that name. And then our illustrious Van Jones, which perked my interest, and the Greens job czar. A black activist with strong anti-white views. I mean, he just simply does not like whites. He's a member of the American Communistic Party, so professed and proud to be so, and the San Francisco Communist Party. One isn't enough for this guy. Said that George Bush caused the 9/11.
Is that also known as the gay communist? I'm just curious.
No.
I thought they might have a chapter there in San Francisco.
Well, you know, no, one's the gay communist. The other one is an anti-white communist. But understand that we are the racists. Mm-hmm. But he thinks that George Bush was the cause of 9/11 and wanted Bush investigated by the World Court for war crimes. And like I say, we're the ones that are called racists. It's amazing to me. He has since, because of Beck, he resigned post-haste real quick. But the point is, why would anybody appoint him? You know, I don't like George Bush too much at all for what he's done. But I could never see George Bush appointing somebody like that. Never. And then you got Daniel Freed. He's the Guantanamo closer czar, human rights activist. He believes Americans has caused the global war on terrorists and believe terrorists have more rights above and beyond all of American citizens. And you remember when Obama was trying to try all these people and house them here in the United States when he was trying to shut down. Thank God at that point in time we did have somebody with some intestinal fortitude and fought against that, because the closure of Guantanamo has not yet happened. And,
Well, before we go to the next czar, Bill, I've got to get in here real quick. One of the worst nightmares that can befall an American today is identity theft. If it happens to you, it may take months or even longer to recover from it, if you can recover at all. Don't let it happen to you. Protect yourself in advance. Sign up today with LifeLock. LifeLock is a lot more than just your standard credit monitoring service. LifeLock helps to protect your personal information using a combination of data surveillance techniques and outstanding member service 24/7, 365. There's really nothing that comes close to LifeLock. To protect your identity with LifeLock and get 10% off their great service, go to conservativenationmedia.com and click on the LifeLock banner. Network may not cover all transactions and the scope may vary. That's conservativenationmedia.com, then click on the LifeLock banner. You'll be very glad that you did. All right, we're up against a hard break. Don't go away. We'll be right back on Inside Tennessee.
Americans have known Tennessee as the volunteer state since the War of 1812. Now, Tennessee is leading the way in another major conflict, the war to keep America's identity, values, and freedoms intact. Even if you've never walked in Memphis or hiked the Blue Ridge Mountains, if you respect traditional American values, you should know about the Tennessee Action Council. Tennessee Action Council fights to preserve American values, defend our way of life, and protect the U.S. Constitution. This isn't just Tennessee's battle. It affects every American who loves our country and wants to pass the real America, unstained by progressive liberalism, along to future generations. No matter where you are in this magnificent country of ours, Tennessee Action Council is on your side and on America's side. Go to TN4Action.com. That's TN, the number 4, Action.com, to volunteer for Tennessee and America. That's TN, the number 4, Action.com, to stand for America now.
Welcome back to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. Phone number 718-305-7176. And I'm speaking with Bill Hemrick, and we're talking about Obama's czars. I'm going to check in with Kurt here. I think Kurt might have a comment on the czars. Kurt, how you doing tonight again?
I'm doing good, Dave. Bill, how are you? Good to have you on the show.
Hey, thank you, Kurt. How you been?
I've been fine as kind, brother, fine as kind. We're just taking names and kicking butt over here.
Yeah, really.
I'm not really up to speed on this czar thing, I don't think, but I had a thought while I was listening to you guys here. I think I can identify as of yet unidentified czar, and I'm having trouble pulling the name out of my memory. You guys can probably help me with this. I can see her face now. The woman who testified, I believe it was before Congress, that she needed, I don't know what it was, $1,000 a month for contraceptives. You know who I'm talking about?
Sandra Fluke.
Sandra Fluke. Sandra, I'm going to have to gather, I'm going to guess that Sandra Fluke is our condom czar. Would I be off base on that?
Yeah, well, she surely wanted us to pay for her. I remember I was in the Galapagos Island, and I was talking to one of the guides there about their governmental structure, and they do have a socialistic government, but they don't have welfare. You got to work. I mean, but they will give you, you know, credit for housing and things that like that to help you. And as I was talking, this one person that was on a tour with us, she said, "You guys are talking about politics, and I can tell that you, me, is kind of conservative, and I would vote for Bush or a conservative if you guys would stay out of my girly parts." And I, seriously, I thought this message that they convey as Democrats, it's hitting home to people. What does Rush Limbaugh call them? The uninformed. Well, she certainly was
low information voter. The low information voter.
Well,
which is a requirement to be a Democrat. You have to be a low-information voter. Unfortunately, most Republicans aren't much better.
I would agree, but the point is, she actually believed it. I finally met somebody on the other side of my beliefs, and it really stunned me. I mean, she was very convincing that she believed what Obama was selling. And that's disturbing, folks, because when they believe it, you're going to have a hard time defeating this guy. There's your problem, I think. So, but anyway, yeah, if you can pay for their contraceptions and their health care and their cell phones, then you're good to go. And that's the 47% that Romney had to apologize for, which was a bad mistake, but, you know. You know, so anyway, we can get back to it here. We have Cass Sunstein. I think he is the absolute most dangerous person in this country. Well, let me listen. I don't know if Obama is more dangerous than Eric Holder. I would seriously probably put Holder at the top or Soros at the top, one of the two, and then Obama under that. Like Sunstein is right.
Yeah, but they
there.
Only have their power because of Obama, so.
Well, they do, but I disagree with that, Dave. They have their power because of that attorney general. He's the one that selects who's going to get what law we're going to pass. Why do you think that we're not making any headway on Benghazi or on the IRS or the internal, the IRS, any of them, any of those.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is he still works for Obama. If Obama wanted those things known, then he would be able to make it happen, but he doesn't want them known.
I agree with that, but because Holder's the go-between, the blocking back, if you will, he stops Congress from getting any type of pertinent information from any hearings. How long have these hearings been going on? You know, a couple of years now. And we've still no farther today than we were when those things happened. But, you know, what difference does it make? You know, we only lost 4 Americans. And, you know, if I were anybody related to the Democratic Party and Hillary Clinton called me a friend, I'd seriously watch my back, because that's what she called Stevens. He was one of my very best friends. And look where she left him, completely out in the cold. And I'm ex-military. And I'm telling you, that brings a tear to me. Because I can't fathom. We have a creed, a code, if you will, you know. No one left behind. I got your back.
Yeah.
I guess that's the memo that Obama never got. And it's sad. Let me tell you. Anyway, John Brenner. He's the terrorist czar. He's anti-CIA with no training in diplomatic or governmental affairs. He believes that open borders with Mexico and a dialogue with terrorists. That's, I think, where Obama got that. If I talk to them, they'll like us and they'll treat us better. I wonder how that's worked out for him, because it hasn't. And he has suggested to Obama that he disbands the military 100%. 100%. And then he's not been confirmed either, and we don't know where he stands. And Herb Allison is the TARP czar. He was a Fannie Mae CEO responsible for the U.S. recession by using real estate mortgages to back up the stock market. It caused millions of people to lose their homes and their life savings. And again, that to me seems like it's the ploy or the plan that the Democrats have more people than the government. You're going to have a very large government if this continues.
So. Yeah.
And then John Holder, a science czar, he's a fierce environmentalist. He belongs to the Sierra Club. When I first heard of the Sierra Club, I thought it was a good thing. You know, you're out here trying to save the environment. And it was a disaster when I saw the Exxon Valdez, all those animals with oil all over them, that was heartfelt, you know. And there wasn't—I don't think anybody from either side of the aisle that didn't have feelings for that. Nobody wanted that to happen, but because that one incident happened. We don't go after our natural resources. We're not allowed to drill offshore anymore. And look what happened when the Gulf spilled through BP in the Gulf. $20 billion it cost them. And I'd like to know where that money went, because it sure didn't go for restitution. But Obama made BP pay for that. I think all of it refers back to that the Exxon Valdez, and that was the first Bush.
I've got to get in here real quick, Bill. I've got to break in. I've got to do a quick read here. I'd like to let you in on a little secret. Those of us who love America are about to roll out the big guns. We can't bring serious anti-communists like Joe McCarthy, Ronald Reagan, and Barry Goldwater back to there, but we can. We found the next best thing, and it starts Thursday, January 16th. Patriot writer, broadcaster, and conservative intellectual Lisa Richards is joining conservativenationmedia.com on the 16th of January at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 Central, with Rock and Roll Politics. If William F. Buckley were around today, Lisa would be his favorite broadcaster, and she'll be yours too. Lisa Richards, Rock and Roll Politics. Thursdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 Central on conservativenationmedia.com, where America always wins. You're listening Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176. Bill, we got about 2 minutes. You got about 2 minutes left, and we've got to move on to the next guest. So I'm just going to turn it back over to you to let you finish up there real quick.
Well, you know, most of these czars, we've heard them. But let me get back to Cass Sunstein here. This guy is our regulation czar. And why I say he's so dangerous is because his left hand doesn't know what his right hand is doing, and that pertains to all of us. Like, what kind of concern would you have as a business owner of X to the business of Z? You don't. You've got to do yours. And so he is implementing to date, and well, in 2012, he had implemented over 17,000 brand new regulations. And none of that included the healthcare regulations that, I mean, you could stack it 5 foot high with this guy. He took a page right out of King George when he was anointed king in 1760. Instead of taxing everybody right off the bat, he just put regulations and restrictions on them. And those regulations and restrictions caused so much devastation to the business end of things, and that's exactly what's happening today. You see our energy industry being shut down. The coal industry, the big fight is on now, and oil and gas. That's cost us over 250,000 jobs in 2012. I can't imagine what it's cost us. And they want
it's only going to get worse, that's for sure. Bill, we're just about out of time, but I appreciate you coming on. And, I knew there were some czars out there. I knew that none of them were good, but I didn't know about all the czars. I got a better feel for them, and now I'm worried even more. Thank you very much.
There's nothing that you can do to spin this in a positive form. I'm sorry to say, but America
will
survive.
Well, I hope we do. But thank you for coming on. Thank you for being with us. God bless you, and we'll talk to you again before long. Have a good one.
Thanks, Dave, for having me. Bye.
All right, we're going to take a real short break, and we'll be right back with Representative Hill right after this break. Thanks.
If you love America, you're among friends here.
Dr. Martin Luther King said, "Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere, and the worst injustice imaginable is the wrongful conviction of an innocent person." I'm Sam Thurman, host of A Just Cause Coast to Coast, Tuesdays 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 Central, on conservativenationmedia.com. We take a look at what happens when innocent people go to jail as a result of bad evidence, wrongful prosecution, and dishonest witnesses. We use real cases of actual Americans who've been wrongfully convicted. A Just Cause Coast to Coast, Tuesdays 8 Eastern, 7 Central, conservativenationmedia.com.
Silver wings shining in the sunlight, roaring engines headed somewhere in flight.
Welcome back to Inside Tennessee and Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176. And we have Representative Hill on the line. And Tim Hill, correct?
That's right, Dave.
Okay,
thanks,
appreciate
so
you being with us.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me on.
Well, glad to have you. And as I understand it, you are the sponsor of an education bill that will be in the education subcommittee tomorrow morning. And the bill basically just requires that our state teach about our founding documents, teach about the history of our country and the history of our state. Is that pretty accurate?
You know, that's very accurate. House Bill 1129, it's a piece of legislation that I filed last year. It originated with some of my constituents back home in the what I consider the most beautiful House district in the entire state of Tennessee, the 3rd House District. And in fact, when folks say from Memphis to Mountain City, I actually represent Mountain City as well as portions of two other counties right at the very northeast tip of the state of Tennessee. But this legislation has garnered tremendous interest ever since it passed the Senate. It passed the Senate floor on Tuesday 29-0, which was a shock. And we've been working hard. I've been working hard. I and my staff have been working hard and getting ready for the education subcommittee meeting tomorrow at 3:00. And it turns out, Dave, that we're number one on the calendar. And we all know that education is going to be a very hot topic in the legislature this year in the General Assembly here in Tennessee. So we kind of get to get things kicked off right. But what my legislation says is very simple. It is very... it's very straightforward. The intent of the legislation is to make sure that the U.S. Constitution, our foundational documents, our founding documents, like the Declaration of Independence and the Federalist Papers, other items like that, that they're actually taught, required to be taught in the state of Tennessee in public schools to our children. And I had no idea that this was such a controversial concept or controversial thought, but we've turned a lot of heads with the legislation, and so we find ourselves in a little bit of a firestorm, but that's okay because it's worth it because we're standing up for what we believe in and for our principles.
Well, let me ask you this. Who is opposed to teaching our history? Who's opposed to learning about the founding documents? I'm just curious.
Well, you know, that's a really good question. You could, I suppose, define it as the ominous they, but the fact of the matter is that up until literally the last 20 hours or so, the Department of Education has stalled and stalled and stalled because, frankly, they don't like being told what to do. And see, I believe that it is our constitutional, not just right, but our responsibility as the legislature, the state legislature, to instruct the Department of Education how to act. Now, this bill, and again, I've learned so much in this process, but this bill flies in the face of bureaucracy, flies in the face of the mindset that we have no business writing curriculum out of the legislature. And that was a huge argument that I've heard from some of the various folks of, well, you don't want to throw out curriculum out of the legislative branch because it could change from year to year and that's just not fair and we just don't need to put ourselves in that situation. And Dave, I would say that if you're talking about how many jumping jacks that the children need to do in the classroom, well, not in the classroom, but in the PE class, fine, I don't disagree with that statement at all. But we're talking about the U.S. Constitution. We're talking about foundational documents. We're talking about who we are as a nation. And I get asked a lot of, you know, hey, you know, Timothy, Representative Hill, what are you going to do to slow down the decline of our country? What are you going to do to make our country a better place, our state a better place? Well, this piece of legislation, it does it because it literally cuts to the core to require these things to be taught. And part of the consternation is the bill, as it's written right now, it does just a few things. It requires the teaching of those documents, and not just those teaching of those documents, but those documents from a positive perspective, from an American exceptionalist mindset. It requires the reporting of those, of how it is taught and when it's taught, back to make sure that it's being done. And then there's also a textbook component to it as well at this point that requires that what goes in the textbook that's approved by the Department of Education is something that is actually accurate as opposed to some version of revisionist type history. And so it undertakes a lot.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. I've just got to say something here. The Department of Education is upset because they don't want to be told what to do. Now, I don't vote for the people that sit on the Department of Education, but I do vote for my state representative and my state senator. And, yes, I want the Department of Education and other departments to listen to the people who represent me, number one. Number two, we shouldn't even be having this conversation. If the Department of Education was doing its job, that would already be in the textbooks. So it's
right.
Their
failure. Right, and I think that they're going to, when we get to committee tomorrow, depending on how it goes, they're going to make the argument that it's already being done or that there's no need for this legislation. And, you know, my concern is not about today. My concern is about 5 years from now, 10 years from now, I want this concept in code because there's no guarantee that our Department of Education will be even as good as it is now. It could get even worse, and well, some folks may not feel it could get worse, but the idea is that getting this in code makes it something that will stand the test of time and will also force later on, if there's a future legislature that comes through and changes it, then they stand to account for that. Right now, the Department of Education is unelected. like you said, and if they want to change the curriculum or they want to change rules, they just feel free to do it over a conference call, and there's no input. And so there's a whole host of other issues that are going to come before the education committee this year. But, you know, this one to me is fundamental, and hopefully we'll get a fair shake tomorrow, and we'll get to see how it goes.
Yeah, well, and with the issues that we've had with textbooks in this state, that's another failure of the Department of Education. So, I mean, I don't think they can – I don't know. I don't really have a leg to stand on. I mean, they are obvious failures. They can't they are unable to produce teachers or to ensure that the teachers in this state have a basic knowledge to where they can pick up and identify the problems that are in the textbooks they are considering adopting. They couldn't find it. A bunch of retirees, your grandmothers, your grandfathers, for the most part, had to find the problems in the Tennessee State textbooks. Their teachers couldn't find the problems. So we've got a caller on the line here, if you don't mind, Representative Hill. We'll go to a caller.
Sure.
If it'll pull up here. I'm not trying to pull Sherry up, but no luck. All right, well, if he pops up, we'll let him ask his question. Right now the thing is just spinning. So, but now, what about the governor? I understand the governor doesn't support this legislation.
Well, what happened after the legislation actually passed, and this has been, you know, in a couple of different news stories, the administration issued what they call a flag warning, or a flag basically saying that the governor would either not sign this legislation if it passed, or he'd veto it. And, you know, that's intended to send a shockwave and make people like myself take either stutter or take a second look at whether or not that I should carry the legislation or not. And, you know, again, my argument is if we're talking about other types of piece of legislation, then maybe, you know, might take a second look at it, or might be interested in maybe changing course. But this is the U.S. Constitution. This is something that is our very, very foundation. And so, you know, I have no interest in slowing down. I have no interest in stopping. And, you know, I'd encourage everybody that's listening, you know, of course, they can visit my Facebook page. It's, of course, facebook.com/Hill4House. It's H-I-L-L-F-O-R, House. Anybody that can make it to committee tomorrow, it's going to be at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and certainly welcome to do so. I also would ask everybody to please call their state representative and their state lawmaker. Again, the legislation's already passed the Senate, and so now the focus is on the House, and I intend to do everything that I possibly can to make sure it comes to a vote, but also so we can get the legislation in a fashion that reaches those goals, which is teaching those documents, having the reporting in it, and then also I would like to see the textbook portion follow through. But it's not just those items. It's also, and this is where it seems to really tweak some of the education folks, which is from more of the exceptionalism, American exceptionalism perspective, which, again, I don't understand why it's such a consternation, frustration issue for them, but it is. But that is, you know, a very little concern when we're trying to move forward with it.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you're doing this. It's a bill that needs to be passed. It's to their disgrace that it even has to be proposed, because they're obviously not doing their job. And it's disgraceful that our governor, Bill Haslam, once again, is on the wrong side of this issue. So hopefully he'll wake up. Either way, I appreciate you standing your ground, and thanks for coming on the show. Thanks, above all, for pushing this bill, and just stick with it, and I hope to hear that it gets through.
Thanks so much, Dave. I appreciate so much. Appreciate the opportunity to talk about it.
All right. Well, hey, we'll have you back on some other time. We're just about out of time, but thanks again, and take care, and we'll talk to you later.
Okay, thank you.
Have a good one. Hey, definitely call your rep, call your state senator. This bill needs to, well, you're actually, the Senate, it's already through the Senate, but call your state rep. Thanks for listening, and we will see you again next week. Take care.